You are Locked On Pirates, your daily podcast on the Pittsburgh Pirates, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Pirates, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. My name is Jason, and I'm very happy and pleased to be bringing back Josh Taylor from, oh gosh, everywhere you get your sports news in Pittsburgh nightly. We're talking TV on the CW Nightly Sports Call, on KDKA, on 937thefan.com on Saturdays with Bucko Talk and at other spots. And it's really hard to not hear or read Josh Taylor if you're a Pittsburgh sports fan. So, Josh, thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem, man. Always good to talk to you.
All right, so let's get right into it. We want to talk about a couple things. Today's an off day. Pirates lost the last game of the San Francisco Giants series, but have been playing pretty well as of late. So we put out the call to you guys on Twitter yesterday, at Locked On Pirates, and asked you, what are your Pirates trigger words? I thought this would be a fun topic to talk about on an off day. Basically, anything that someone says Pirates-related or baseball-related, be it from this season, seasons past, you know, tried and true cliches about the team, anything that you hear that gets you really fired up. And we got a lot of great responses. So, Josh, going to pick out a couple of the best ones that we can kind of riff on, and then I'll get your take as well. But let's start with this one. And this one is from at Bloop and a Blast, pretty good Pirates follow on Twitter. And he says, imagine if they had just won this or that game. And he takes that as being this season as well as, say, the wild card years as well. But let's talk about that because as a baseball fan, you don't want to live in hypotheticals. But Josh, it's kind of really true with this team, being that they had 2 4-game sweeps at the hands of the Nationals and the Philadelphia Phillies this year. So as good as the team is playing, I think it's fair to say, you know, what if they had split those games or even done better than that?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, you know, continue on the what if thread, you can continue to kind of pull it and see how quickly the sweater unravels. But what if George Contos doesn't blow it at home in the 8th inning against the Reds? What if they, you know, actually sweep the Cubs instead of taking 2 out of 3? There are so many different things that you could put in as far as what ifs go. I mean, you could pick out any one game and say, if they win this one, maybe things change. I mean, you could do that with any one of their losses. You know, what if you want to go back to last season, what if Jameson Taillon doesn't get diagnosed with testicular cancer and Trevor Williams doesn't get knocked around in L.A. against the Dodgers? What if that happened? So, you know, if you want to make every single hypothetical situation possible, then you might as well undo everything that's mathematically improbable or probable for that matter. Because you could pick anything as far as what is go. What if Garrett Cole doesn't mentally unravel in the wild card game in 2015? Mm-hmm. You know, he could just continue to go down the line. So there's plenty of what ifs you can pick from if that's the case.
Yeah, I kind of get his point, you know, saying that, you know, you don't want to live in the past, you want to push forward. But first of all, if there were no what ifs, you know, I think, you know, we'd all be out of jobs. Sports radio. Yeah,
that's true.
Sports radio would be very much different than what it is today. But, you know,
my show will be 15 minutes long, basically.
And that's not right. That's not fair for anybody. But, I mean, I think I think it's fair to look back and say, you know, if this would have happened, the Pirates season might have looked a little better. The way I kind of approach these things is that I think they work more in terms of looking at the season as a whole. Like you just said, a couple instances from last year. So to that reader on Twitter, I would say, you know, what ifs are fun if you kind of indulge a little bit. So it at least gives you something to think about. So let me hit you another one, Josh. Another person replied, and over the past week, I got so sick of hearing how better the Pirates are without McCutchen. He knows we are, and we understand that it deserves said, but it got to the point where some hosts were just running his name through mud. And you actually chimed in here that it frustrated you too. So I think this is a good segue to talk about the McCutchen return as a whole. I think it was a very successful weekend as far as the Pirates acknowledging what's happened in the past and looking forward to the future. We'll talk a little bit about, from your perspective, how you appreciated the weekend of McCutchen's return.
I talked about this a little bit both on Bucko Talk and on my show on Sunday mornings on 93.7 The Fan, and I kind of echoed the same sentiment that Chris Mack had in a column that he wrote after that Friday night when Andrew McCutchen was there and the Pirates just dumped on the Giants 11-2. He says, hey, look, Pittsburgh, you got a chance to come back and see one of the faces of your franchise, return with another team, and then the team that was here beat up on that team. So, you know, you got to see one of your great players in your franchise's history. And, oh, yeah, the team that's here is pretty good, too. They're playing pretty well right now. And that was the way I kind of summed that up. And my sentiment going into that weekend was, look, you can appreciate what Andrew McCutchen's done and still root for this current team at the same time. You don't have to pick a side. you can still appreciate the past while appreciating the present. There's no line in the sand that says you have to do one or the other. There's a reason why the past is the past and the present is the present. You can still enjoy both and look back on the one with another appreciative look at the other one. It totally boggles my mind why people think that you have to hate every guy that leaves here, as if it was Andrew McCutchen's fault that he was traded to San Francisco. He didn't pull the trigger on that deal. Neil Huntington did. So why would I fault him for leaving when he said repeatedly he wanted to remain a Pirate? He said he wanted to be a Pirate for life. It's not his decision he went to San Francisco, so I can't be mad at him. I had a guy who called, you know, Bucko Talk, complaining about every single thing he could think of as to why he didn't boo McCutchen, but also didn't cheer for him. And I'm sitting there going, you do realize how good this guy was for 4 years between 2012 and 2015, that he was pretty much the best guy in baseball not named Mike Trout. And you're mad about other stuff that really didn't matter, like stuff that really did not, you know, add to or take away from his experience in Pittsburgh or how good or how bad the team was as a result of it. And it's just like, if you want to find stuff to be mad at, be mad if the team is losing. Mm-hmm. Be mad if the guy goes to the Giants and is making them a contender, kind of like what Gerrit Cole is doing in Houston, but that's beside the point. But if you want to be mad at something, be mad at stuff that's tangible to be mad at. Don't be mad at things that make no sense to be mad at. You know, you can still appreciate what the man did and how good of a player he was, not just for the city of Pittsburgh, but for baseball as a whole. And still appreciate the fact that, hey, these two teams have gone their separate ways, and both sides apparently seem to be doing pretty well in the wake of it.
Yeah, and if there's any sport that lends itself to situations like this past weekend, it's baseball, with, you know, just a sheer amount of history. And we're talking about McCutchen, a guy who had four straight top five MVP finishes.
Right. That's how good he was.
Just show up, pay respect, and then, like, you know, then root for your team. I don't understand why this is so difficult. So I'm right there with you.
And for the record, for those people who seem to be constantly angry about this, that hockey team that plays across the river, they do it every year. Goaltender came back in February, and they had a really nice long video for him, and they sat there and waited while he went through all his emotions and cried and all that other stuff, and then he played a hockey game after that. So it's not like it's that foreign. So let's stop acting like this is some brand new thing and it's out of left field. That's all I'm saying with that.
Yeah, and it seemed like, you know, for the most part with the Fleury and Murray situation, I'm not too much of a hockey guy, so disclaimer there, but it seemed like it was not exactly the same situation, but also very polarizing when you look at how people put Fleury's contributions in context against Murray's and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's always more room for more nuance in sports. And, yeah, but that McCutchen, as far as getting back to the original premise of this, it is definitely a trigger word. And we'll have to see if it dies down now that he's made a return and everybody can kind of move on. But Josh, what's your Pirates trigger word?
Oh, there's too many.
Yeah, imagine being the host of the flagship station's weekly program and kind of build up that library a little bit.
Oh, yeah, there's quite a database there. My favorite one... I'll pick two. One I'll pick is financial flexibility. The other one I'll pick is Nutting's wallet. Those are the two I'll pick from, because the thing I keep hearing is, oh, they want to gain financial flexibility. I want to let everybody listening to this podcast and every baseball fan in every market in a little secret. Every owner in every market is looking for financial flexibility. All of them, even from the big spending teams down to the small spending teams. Would you believe going into this season, the Yankees wanted to stay below the luxury tax line? That was actually an aim for them. They wanted financial flexibility to stay within the luxury tax line. Matter of fact, a lot of teams are looking for financial flexibility to stay below the luxury tax because they don't want to have to spend extra money to populate their teams, especially when we're starting to discover that, hey, the teams that are winning World Series, especially the last few, are building from within and paying to keep their own guys as opposed to overpaying for other guys outside of their organizations. So is it that surprising that teams are starting to find, don't want to shake too much when I say this, financial flexibility in what they do with all 30 major league organizations? Probably not. But then again, you also have to remind people, or you have to remind yourself, that some people don't pay attention to what the other teams are doing. They only watch their own team, in which I like to invite people all the time. If you think I'm crazy and you think what I'm saying makes no sense, go look at what other teams are doing. Go look at baseball globally, and go look at what other teams around both leagues are doing. And don't take my word for it. Go watch what they're doing and then find out for yourself. And if you do that, then you'll understand financial flexibility, just from the Pirates' standpoint, it's not just them. There are a lot of teams that are trying to do it, because the teams that keep trying to go all in, they're finding out the long-term disadvantages from doing it aren't necessarily working. Because I imagine there's a few Dodgers fans out there, and I would love to talk to you about the moves they've made in the past 5 years and how much it's paid off for them. And the other thing with Nutting's Wallet, it's just like, oh, well, you know, Nutting's Wallet and fireworks and bobbleheads, and I'm sitting there going, every team at every level does fireworks and bobbleheads. I covered Double-A baseball. I covered the Texas League when I worked in Arkansas. I covered the Northwest Arkansas Naturals, the Double-A affiliate of the Royals. Covered them for about three seasons. You know what they had just about once every month? Bobbleheads and fireworks.
Yep.
A Double-A minor league team. And you know what the Royals had just about once a month? Bobbleheads and fireworks. And so did the Cardinals, who were about 3 hours away, or about 5 or 6 hours away from where I worked. And there was Cardinals coverage in Arkansas, too, because a lot of the state of Arkansas are Cardinals fans, dating back to when radio was a big deal. But that's an entirely different story. But every ball club that I had covered had the same thing, bobbleheads and fireworks, about once a month. It's nothing different. Matter of fact, I actually was sent a bobblehead because a radio station they did some work with, they broadcast the Texas Rangers games, and they gave us Yu Darvish bobbleheads with little counters for his strikeout totals. So we had cool bobbleheads from the Rangers. Every team does it. And you hear the whole, well, Nutting's Wallet thing, and he just wants to make money. Newsflash, they all want to make money.
Yeah.
Every Major League Baseball owner has the same attitude as Bob Nutting. They will take anybody's money if they're giving it away. They're a lot like Clay Davis in The Wire, if you want to make that comparison. But that's pretty much how it works. They're all in it to make money, and they're all benefiting big from what the game as a whole is doing, because baseball has this huge economic boom right now. So they're all benefiting from it.
We're talking to Josh Taylor, who apparently is hooked up enough to get really cool swag from various locales. And also, if you listen to this podcast when Josh is on, you will get a Wire reference. It's almost guaranteed. Anyway.
Oh, every time. I'm good for at least one a day. At least.
And by the way, I hate to harp on you, Josh, but you forgot the word ski lift. You forgot that one, but we'll let it slide.
Oh, ski lift. Yes, of course. Another crazy thing is that they're not the only team that's attached to a team, like attached a group that owns a ski resort, but that's a whole other podcast. We'll break that down in a different one with other business interests that owners are into.
I would love to get into that, but for me, just to wrap
like
up this,
Walmart, for example.
Exactly. And you never know what corporation is behind something, but for me, my trigger word right now is pitching philosophy. I'm so sick of hearing that word.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I might be guilty of using that one a few times.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that might be partially my fault.
No, it's all right. It's something you have to talk about, but at this point, being a quarter of the way into the season, we know the Pirates pitching philosophy is a thing. It's worked for them. I think they're in the slow stages of changing it, so Just to beat in the dead horse right now, especially every time Gerrit Cole hasn't started, kind of bugs me a little bit. But
yeah, it's going to happen. It's one of those byproducts.
Yeah. But part of that pitching philosophy, though, is sticking with, at least for when Clint Hurdle's involved, is sticking with your guys. And let's talk about that for a minute, because one of those guys is George Contos, who, let's be real, is probably going to be removed from the eighth inning sooner rather than later. I didn't really have a chance to see how they would handle a, quote, high leverage, unquote, spot last night against the Giants. But he's more than likely going to be removed. So simple question, Josh. In your view, who takes the eighth inning?
Man, that is a difficult question, because, and I say this as a self-appointed George Contos guy. I anointed myself a George Contos guy when they first picked him up off waivers last year. I was really excited about that move. And one of the reasons why I was excited, because if you look up his eighth inning numbers, throughout his career, his eighth inning numbers are very good for a guy who didn't eventually become a closer. He was actually a pretty good eighth inning pitcher. So I thought it made perfect sense. And then you see how he just continues to fail to miss bats. I mean, he's the one guy in the bullpen that doesn't have a strikeout per nine average of nine or more.
Yep.
He's the only one.
Preach.
And Felipe Vasquez, I think his is like 9.7, and everybody else's is double digits or more. And Contos is like 3.5. He's the only one that doesn't average at least a strikeout per inning. So you look at that and you say, that's probably not ideal for an eighth inning guy. With that said, as far as guys you put in the eighth inning, I'd be very happy, even if you did something as simple as flipping Contos and Michael Feliz. I would try that. I think that's a smaller move that might have a bigger residual effect. Just moving Michael Feliz to the eighth inning, who's actually a pretty good strikeout guy, maybe Contos to the seventh, and you want to move him to the sixth and give Edgar Santana a shot. at the seventh inning, another big strikeout guy. I'd be okay with that. Maybe Richard Rodriguez in the fifth or the sixth inning as opposed to maybe a multiple inning opportunity. I'd be cool with that. I mean, maybe if you want to move Tyler Glasnow to a fifth or sixth inning role as opposed to just a multiple inning opportunity and have Richard Rodriguez do multiple innings. I mean, you have, and this is one of the luxuries, if you want to call it a luxury, that the Pirates have. They have different guys that they can kind of pick and move in different situations. You have more than one multiple inning guy. You have Glasnow, you have Rodriguez, you have Stephen Brault. You have three multiple inning options that you can move around. You have guys that can pitch in the fifth and the sixth. You have guys that can pitch in the seventh and the eighth. So it might just be a matter of maybe flipping one or two or just rearranging here or there. It doesn't have to be as much of a change as maybe just a mild reshuffle. But that's where I would start. If I had to do it in one simple move, I'd move Michael Feliz to the eighth inning and George Contos to the seventh and see what happens.
Yeah, I think Contos would deserve a shot to still be in the mix for, you know, what I would call a significant bullpen spot. But what I don't like is that his secondary pitches are getting really beat up right now. And last year he did...
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Last year he did strike out that prerequisite, like you said, the nine hitters or more per nine. If you prefer a percentage, he struck out 25.2% of his batters last year. But that's not who he is. That was definitely a flash in the pan, a mirage, pick your cliche. But he's striking out just 8.9% this year in K per nine, 3.57. I don't like sending up someone late in games who can't miss bats, at least to a degree that keeps people honest. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. But if I think about who I want to replace him, I look at Kyle Crick, I look at Michael Feliz, I look at Edgar Santana, and they all have very similar stuff. Crick, his last year in the majors, the year he finally broke through and had significant action, 72%. Four-seam fastball usage, 21% slider, a little bit of a change. Michael Feliz, same thing, four-seam slider and just flash a change every now and then. But Edgar Santana kind of has a little bit of a better mix. He has that four-seam fastball. He has a sinking fastball as well that he throws about 36% of the time. And he also has the slider, which he throws for about 32%. So just in the interest of having a little bit of a different look, I might want to say Edgar Santana for that eighth spot. But I'm actually, the more I think about it, I want Tyler Glasnow there. And I wondered about
this. I'd be okay with that.
Me too. I wondered, like, yesterday, Nova was coming, Nova was coming through, the third time in the order was coming up. Off day the next day, you had this big bullpen. Glasnow hadn't pitched for 5 days. I was wondering why not him there. And it makes me wonder what their plan is with him.
And that's a good way to look at it. I've always tried to look at the tea leaves with him, and I felt 2 years ago that his career might be better suited as a bullpen, just because of the way he looks when he's facing a lineup each time through the order. And you know, throughout his career, it doesn't look great, and it just gets worse over time as it goes through the order. But I'm wondering, you know, when you look at his numbers as a reliever, like when you look at his numbers as a starter, the first time, second time through, third time through, don't look too great. But at least as a reliever, they don't look as bad. But his first time through in the first appearance in the game or the first time facing batters in the game as a reliever, you know, hitters only hitting 222 against him. You know, he's actually doing a pretty good job where he's striking out, you know, almost two guys per walk. So it's almost a good collection there, and only one home run allowed in 117 plate appearances. So that first time through, he actually does pretty well as a reliever. So I'm starting to wonder, maybe just him as a one-inning guy. Because I know a lot of people like him as a multiple-inning option because obviously he stretched out, and you think, oh, Andrew Miller, maybe that's the case. And part of me thinks, what if you just give him one shot through because he looks pretty good in that one shot? I mean, even if it's just three or four outs, why not do that? And if the eighth inning is the time to do that, maybe that's the best place since that spot appears to be open. So I'd actually be okay with that thought.
Yeah, and I mean, with Glasnow, we kind of think that, okay, he's figuring some stuff out. Had the out against the Phillies, went something like three, actually I'm looking at right here, 3.2 innings, struck out seven but gave up two, and then kind of got shelled against the Nationals, gave up six in an inning of work. Next two appearances were clean, so he's figuring stuff out. So I think they're kind of in a rough spot with him because, yes, he is figuring these things out, but is he really ready for a kind of a high-leverage, quote-unquote, role that the eighth inning would provide? I still say you roll the dice. I mean, you're still a quarter of the way into the season, you're outperforming miles ahead of what everyone thought you would be. I think now would be the time to throw him up against that wall and see if he sticks.
I agree. And this is another thing that happened. I think it was just yesterday I discovered this because it just happened to me looking at Glass now. It's funny you mentioned him. In innings 7 through 9, his ERA in the 7th through 9th innings is 3.95. I think he's faced 61 batters in 9 appearances, 13 and 2/3 innings. But he struck out 16. And batters are hitting 224 against him. And you think, hey, wait a minute. 10.5 strikeouts per 9 in the 7th through 9th inning, and that's actually not too bad. Or in the 8th inning particularly, he's faced, I think, was 20-some-odd guys, but in 5 innings, 9 strikeouts in 5 innings, and only 6 appearances in the 8th inning. So you think, hey, wait a minute, maybe you're on to something here. So I'd be willing to take a look at that as far as maybe the 8th inning, or even the 7th inning for that matter.
That's a hell of a nugget on your part, by the way. That's really good stuff.
I try to ask myself, what would he want me to talk about? What's a good way I could actually find something he maybe hasn't talked about yet? And let me tell you this, it's hard to find things that maybe you haven't looked up. You raised my game, I'll say that much.
All right. Well, you know, we talk about Glass now, if you say so. But we talk about Glass now, kind of swinging back and forth. And, you know, that the team is doing that as well. They have this soft spot in the schedule over the next few days. I think everyone kind of knows they need to make hay right now while they can before it gets a little tougher. But my bigger picture question to you is this. How does this team avoid those pendulum swings where they win X number of games in a row, lose X number of games in a row? What's it going to take for them to get to be a consistent, you know, every 2 out of 3, every 5 out of 7 team?
You know what? I don't know if there's a way to specifically do it that a manager can tell players. I just don't know if there is. And I've kind of come to that realization, talking to guys like Jack Sorensic, who I've had the pleasure of doing Pirates pregame and post with, you know, former GM of the Brewers and, also the Mariners, former Major League Executive of the Year. And this is a guy who just, I mean, baseball seeps out of his pores. He just knows so much. And we were talking about the whole thing as far as, you know, winning streaks and losing streaks and who you face. And he told me something I thought was pretty poignant. You know, it's not about who you face, it's when you face them. So sometimes you face a team that's hot. You might not be able to do anything against them. It might really be out of your control. And there might be times when you're on a run and the other team can't stop you. It might be out of their control. So the only thing you really do is just focus on game to game. You worry about the matchup for that night. The only time you're looking ahead is putting your pitch and matchups together. You're trying to figure out who's starting or whatever rest and who starts what night. Other than that, you look at it from a night-to-night standpoint, because if you let things carry over from your wins or your losses, it's going to affect how you look at the next game. So I don't know if they really can look at it in terms of, oh, we have these teams on the schedule. I'm starting to think that that might not be the way to go about it. The one thing you look at is if you're at home, you obviously want to look at every home series as, okay, you take that home series. I've always been of the belief if you win 60 to 65% of your games at home and go 500 on the road, you're a playoff team. But I don't know a team that goes into a series and, okay, well, we got 4 games against Houston. We got to try to take 3 out of 4. Yeah. No one looks at it that way. They look at it as, okay, here are the pitchers we got lined up. Who do we have in this first game? Let's get a lineup to combat that guy and try to get our pitcher the best chance to win. If you look at it from game to game, I think that's how you do it. But, you know, in terms of doing it on the field, consistent starting is the thing you're looking for, and that's the one thing this team hasn't gotten. You got to try to get consistent starting pitching, and you have to have guys that can be able to recover from start to start. We haven't seen that as well outside of maybe Trevor Williams. He's the one guy who's really been consistent every night he goes out there. He's the only starter in that group of 4 that started at least 8 games. Nova, Tyone, Williams, and Cool. He's the only one that's gone at least 5 innings in every start. And he's gone 6 in 5 of those 8 starts. So you look at that and you say, if you can get guys that go out and start every game and give you consistent starting pitching, and then you look at your offense and see if you can find ways to just have one more run than the other team every night. No matter how you do it, if you got to do it with a certain lineup, if you have to do it with a certain pitching matchup, you do it the way you can. But, you know, like you mentioned, when you have these favorable times in your schedule, when you start facing division teams, or you start facing teams maybe on a West Coast swing, you look at it from the standpoint of, okay, let's find a way to go in this night and get it done tonight. And if it works the one night, you look at the next night saying, okay, we want to get it done tonight. You don't want to look at it in terms of, okay, let's get this winning streak going, or let's try to stop the bleeding here. You look at each game, and you flush the first one, and you get ready for the next one. I really believe that when you hear that from players and managers, that's something that actually rings true.
Okay, well, I have nothing to add to that. That's how good of an answer it was. I think this is where Clint Hurdle can kind of flex his – you know, at this point, he's a very well-tenured manager in the major leagues. He can kind of keep his team on an even keel And I think it's going to come down to getting the most out of each and every start, like you mentioned. So I think that was a very good answer.
Yeah,
to that question.
And these were some. And these are some of those parts where, you know, when you ask managers questions and they say, oh, well, you know, we'll try to figure it out. We'll go game by game. It's not really always a cliche. When they're trying to figure out things that we're discussing, like how you're going to figure out what you're going to do with the eighth inning spot or what you're going to do about the leadoff spot, these are some of these times when they really do start to try different things to try to find these things out. So sometimes when they tell you it'll be a game-by-game thing or we'll take it day-to-day, they're not always dropping you in a cliche. Sometimes they're dropping you very subtle hints as to what they're trying to do. In my opinion, not to go too completely off topic, but Mike Tomlin is one of those guys that's very good at doing that. He will drop you a subtle hint. Okay, well, we're looking at this and we're looking at that. And when you hear, oh, it's a game-to-game thing, you just assume that they're just trying to blow you off. No, they're kind of giving you a hint as to how they might go about approaching everything. And if you're Clint Hurdle, you're using this time, especially when you're facing teams like the White Sox and the Padres and the Reds before you get to the Cardinals to maybe get a firmer grasp of what might work and what might not work before you get to the Cardinals and the Cubs by the end of the month.
Okay, Josh, so we're going to get you out of here with just one last, I want your gut reaction, just your first flash of answer to this question. If we visit this team again in the middle of June, are we still going to think that they can be contenders?
I think we will. I think we'll feel the same way we do now. Now, as June and July come around, or should I say as June turns into July, I'm not as sure. Because between May and June, and I always say that there's four real points that you look at what a team is during the course of the season. One of them is Mother's Day, and we just passed that. The other one's right between Father's Day and the All-Star break. You start to look at around then, too. The third one is the trade deadline. So when you're getting to between Father's Day and the All-Star break, right around, you know, mid to late June, we'll revisit it then, and I think they're close to the same position that they're in now. I think they're to the point where you're seeing Jameson Taillon make adjustments and bounce back. I think Trevor Williams is still doing what he does, going and giving you at least five a night and probably leaving with a lead or a tie. I think Yvonne Nova is still doing what he's doing, where you have, on average, one good start, one bad start, and one start. It's just you never know what you're going to get in the mixed bag. And between now and then, you'll also get another couple starts at least from Nick Kingham. You'll get the return of Joe Musgrove by the end of the month, and you'll try to see what's what with him. But I think some things will improve. I think the starting pitching situation should improve with a little bit more stability. I think the lineup should probably, if not improve, at least hold serve with the possible return of Josh Harrison at the leadoff spot, which, by the way, this team is doing what they're doing without a consistent leadoff presence because that guy's been out for 5 weeks, if you can wrap your mind around that. I'd like to think you're going to see the continued production from that 5, 6, 7 spot in the lineup because Dickerson, Cervelli, and the platoon of Freeze and Moran has been working really, really well. So I think those things can carry over. You're not going to see it every night, but you will see a combination of those things happening over time. So within a month, I do expect some things to be better. Now, will guys slump? Sure, but we don't know which ones will. We don't know which guys will slump. We don't know which guys will surge. But I will say within the next month, I think the pieces are still in place that within the next month, this team could still at least hold water. Now, the period after that, when June ends going into July, then you're getting into the thick of the pre-trade deadline era, where teams like the Cardinals and the Cubs, they're going to try to upgrade pitching. I imagine Milwaukee's going to try to upgrade pitching because all three teams need it. So if you're the Pirates, you got to look at your own pitching situation and say, well, how are we going to fix ours? Because everybody else is going to fix theirs. But this next month or so, I think things kind of remain the same. But after that, they're going to have some serious questions that they need to answer.
All right. Well, his name is Josh Taylor. You can find him on Twitter at Josh Taylor HD, on your radio dial, 937 The Fan, and on TV on KDKA and the CW 90 Sports Call from time to time. Josh, always great, man. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you, man. Always good talking to you, brother.